Tape.
The champ is
Champions
here.
Live is the name. Talking sports is our game.
Welcome to Urban Media Today Radio. I'm your co-host, Bill Neal, along with Kevin Cameron. It is Soul Take, Champions Live sports talk show.
Yes, hello everyone. My name is Kevin Cameron, and I'm ready to kick things off. What an excited time for sports.
And today we're joined by two legends, the great JT Thomas, four-time Super Bowl champion, joining us in studio today, and smoking Jim Frazier. He was smoldering for a while, but he's smoking again. He was smoldering for a while. They threw a little water on him for a minute, but he's smoking again. But we're here coming to you to bring you the year in review in Pittsburgh, Western Pennsylvania, national sports, and to bring you some things that are going on in the sports world today. And Kev, I know we've talked about this until the cows come home. Well, you're from Aliquippa, so you understand cows coming home. But we've talked about this whole Steeler thing. And when we talk about year in review, it would seem to me that the number one topic would be the Pittsburgh Steelers, certainly locally. And since we have the great JT Thomas here, I would think that we want to kick everything off with that. I know we all have some varying opinions. Smoking Jim Frazier's in the war room, helping with telling the Roonies what to do and what not to do. And, of course, as we all know, they don't listen to a word he says, but he's in there nonetheless. But let me just kick it off by saying this. I remember someone telling me, if Mel Blount is the greatest cornerback in the history of football and they ain't throwing to his side, then they're throwing to the other guy's side. Uh-huh. That would be JT Thomas.
Okay.
Wouldn't that make him the second greatest cornerback in football history? I mean, yeah, I ain't the smartest guy in the world.
With the type of defense that the Pittsburgh Steelers had at that time, I would think so. I would definitely think so.
It kind of adds up. But yeah. Let's take a look at this. First of all, JT, welcome to the show. And
just to let you know, Bill, I can't let you get away with the Aliquippa comment.
No,
I mean, you know,
nothing personal.
If you can't love greatness, I don't know what to say.
Well, you, as Jim, Smoking Jim, as you know, once you introduce Aliquippa into the equation, that's the segment in and of itself.
Yeah, Aliquippa, PA, Aliquippa, PA for you national listeners, you know, the home of the Ty Laws and Tony Dorsett and Mike Decca, and I can go on and on and on. So welcome to greatness.
Since you insisted on sticking that in there,
uh-huh.
and we'll come back to it, I think it's a well-known fact, Tony Dorsett is not from Aliquippa. He's from Hopewell.
Okay.
Are you stealing cats? You don't have enough cats?
You ask my boy Tony D where he's from, and he'll let you know.
Let's come back.
Okay,
to it.
Thank you.
Hey, JT Thomas is here in all sincerity, man. Thanks for being here today, helping us kick off our opening show. And truly one of the great, great football players, great athletes the NFL has ever had. I would ask you, JT, to maybe allow us to flash back with you on the glory years. How was it during that time when Pittsburgh Steelers were the greatest team on the planet?
Well, Bill, first, I'd like to say thank you for having me here. And to reflect back, you know, I have to go through my CTE tendencies to kind of dig up some of the archives here. But nevertheless, I mean, I can't recall too many things, because if I do, they may kick me out of the lawsuit.
Gotta be careful.
I have to be careful what I recall. as you know, that was a transforming time for Pittsburgh and also for the city. So at that time, we weren't cognizant of the fact that we were actually that good. You know, Pittsburgh hadn't won in 40 years until Franco's immaculate reception. So I come the following year, and, you know, it's still a newness to us, and we're not really aware of the magnitude or the great players that we had until we got, after that second Super Bowl, we came to the realization that we was on something good. And it was a great time, because at that time, the city embraced us, they owned us, they knew us, and we were their Steelers. Yeah.
I remember L.C. Greenwood, and of course you and I have had a lot of conversations, many of which cannot be discussed on an open microphone.
So true.
But I remember L.C. saying to me one time when we were doing the football camp together, he said there was a time when there was nothing we couldn't do and nothing we couldn't have. I mean, figuratively speaking, the world was your oyster.
That's so true. For a lot of us coming out of the South, Pittsburgh was a melting pot in so many ways, because we would say, you know, for us, you can go around the world and don't leave Pittsburgh. And at that time, you know, most Pittsburghers are a little different. Now, most Pittsburghers work and die within 5 miles where they were born. But we had access to the entire, you know, tri-state area. So for us, it was just a great place to be. And you were their Steelers. They knew everything about you. And at that time, part of the marketing strategy was to put us in the community. So we were in churches, JCs, Kiwanis, and at the same time, we're making a living. Most of us made more money in the community than we made playing football back then. People don't know that.
Imagine that.
Well, you raise a good point, and I assume that that's no longer the case. There was a specific strategy to plant you in the community, as you certainly were.
Right.
So I would imagine that's no longer part of the plan.
Well, no, that was a great marketing strategy by Joe Gordon. 5 days a week in off season, we were busy playing basketball, speaking engagement in churches, getting paid anywhere from $50 to maybe $500, which was a great day, to chip ham sandwiches.
And JT, you know, I know who Joe Gordon is, but yes. If you mm-hmm. could, you know, just explain.
Yeah, Joe Gordon was, I guess, the marketing VP at the time, and really his responsibility really was putting the guys in the marketplace. And we were out there, and, you know, people had access to us. And so they knew us. We were part of the community. And so they would say, you are our Steelers. Today is a little different. The players don't need the community, really, for the most part.
Right.
For us, it's a part of our income. Like I say, we made, there are some nights, believe it, you know, in the 70s, we'll make $800 to $1,000 a night playing basketball. You know, and that's tax-free to us.
Mm-hmm. As I recall.
Since
I had the Steeler teams out a couple times, yeah. I do require the payment process.
Yeah, and so that was something, you know, you actually make more money than your base contract.
Well, Kev, and let me just digress a second and say this in all sincerity. You hail from Aliquippa, PA, and again, for the national listeners, you probably can't find a place anywhere in the United States that offers more championships and legends and accomplished athletes than Aliquippa, PA. So having been an athlete there yourself, having come from Aliquippa, you certainly can speak to that kind of legendary growth. How do you remember the Steelers back in the day?
Well, I remember the Steelers back in the day as a team that, of course, always won, that overcame a lot of obstacles from a standpoint of, you know, as JT mentioned, was a losing organization for so long, and then became this winning team and a winning franchise. And you mentioned Aliquippa, you know, I believe at that time had the second largest steel mill in the world, J&L at the time. So we used to look forward to watching the Steelers game, just like Western Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. On Sundays. So, you know, I really, as a child, I remember the Steelers becoming a winning team and having a dynasty and a lot of great players, okay? And from a franchise standpoint, when you think about it, all the way from the 70s moving forward, the Steelers have always had some of the most dominant players in the NFL. So you talked about Mel Blunt, you know, back in the 70s, and you had Minjo Green, and you had Franco Harris, and, you know, you had Lynn Swann and John Stallworth, Donnie Shell, and many others. So, you know, just to get back to the point, the Steelers I remember as a dominating team.
JT, let me piggyback off that. How much of that, certainly the drafting of those players was specific and intentional. But how much of that was, I'm hesitating here, how much of it was luck to be able to get all these great athletes in one place at one time? Is there a little bit of luck in there? Certainly the drafting was specific, but imagine you may not ever be able to put together a team like that.
You won't, because number one, you can't afford a team like that today. You know, Super Bowl X, we had 11 all pros starting on defense. So you can't afford that team. I don't believe in luck. I believe in providence. I think one of the key elements there was we had great coaches, great players. Chuck Knowles had a prototype player he was looking for defensively. Anyway, most of the players had the same mind state or mental capacity in terms of playing defense. But I think one of the greatest aspect, not coaching, was Chuck Knowles was a great communicator. It was amazing to watch him communicate with every player differently. He would walk around and you'll watch him with, well, let's say, for instance, Joe Green. Talking with Joe Green, Joe would be sitting back in his locker, and Chuck would pull a chair up in the locker. So one thing you saw was Chuck Knowles back and Joe Green back up in his cage. Now, if you're talking to Bradshaw, he would have to hug Bradshaw and let him say, you okay, everything is fine. Ernie Holmes, him and Ernie would have to take a walk outside around the stadium, you know. And with me, you know, he would actually like nod his eye and wink his eye, and that was it. Mm-hmm. So now he and Dwight White had another way. He and Dwight White played the dozen. We didn't know Chuck could play the dozen, you know.
That's news.
So what happened, his way of communicating and knowing what buttons to push, he could talk to you at the same time, talk to 60 other people, and he's only talking to you. Mm-hmm. And I experienced that myself. Good example. I come from the Bible Belt, the Bible, you know. Chuck knew that. So we were reviewing my rookie year, one of the kickoff films, and I'm the L3 guy. The L3 guy on the kickoff team should be the first guy down, bust the wedge open, and force the ball carrier behind. Well, I'm going down knowing that's a dangerous place to be. So I'm gingerly walking around. I'm looking around. And so we're sitting there watching the film in the dark, because Chuck always ran the special teams film. And we're sitting there. It's quiet. And he went back and forth. He said, hey, T, is that you at L3? Yep. And he said, where is that four speed? I was going 4.8 because I wanted to be careful going down there, you know, man. And he turned off the film, and he spoke biblically to me. But everyone stopped just talking. He took a biblical verse and said this, knowing that I would know this verse. He said, you know what they say? The meek shall inherit the earth. And clicked it back on. Now, that's not what that meant. Mm-hmm. But the way he used it, mm-hmm. it kind of stabbed me in my heart. Because it's calling me weak, and it's not going to knock me on my behind if I didn't, you know, get it going.
Woke you up, didn't it?
Yeah. But that was his way of speaking. And I think psychologically, Chuck had us believing that every game was like just a dress rehearsal. So when we had the prayer and got up, the chant was showtime. It was like a show and not a game. He would say a pregame speech would be like, okay, guys, we had a great week of practice. Let's go out here and give the fans their money's worth, because I know, you know, Lambert or someone's having a party tonight, mm-hmm. and you guys want to enjoy yourself. Mm-hmm. And that was it. So the mindset was, let's get this over and get to the party.
Let's use that as a stepping off point. Kev, I want to throw it to you, because I know that you and I have had great conversations. So let's spring forward from the glory days. And I think JT made reference to something that I think can allow us to tie in very, very quickly. In that, is Mike Tomlin the kind of coach that can communicate with his players the way JT described Chuck Knoll? And you know, as of late, and certainly I would ask you to remind our national listeners, especially those in New England, how we got to the point of not being able to talk about the Steelers being in the Super Bowl. But in the aftermath of the loss against the Jacksonville, it became kind of a common call-in on talk shows that Tomlin needs to go. Now, we certainly know that's ludicrous thinking, given his winning percentage and et cetera. But can Tomlin communicate with A.B. and Bell and the commercials and the stuff off the field and all that? Was that part of the problem?
I think Mike Tomlin is a great communicator. However, you know, when you compare situations in different spans of time, you really have to take that into consideration. As JT indicated, trying to have a team that the Steelers had back in the 70s would be very difficult to accomplish in this age of free agency. So just to give you an example, Chuck Noll did not have to deal with social media. Chuck Noll did not have to deal with so much, because it started, I believe, at the tail end of Chuck Noll free agency. Okay, and a lot of other issues that NFL players are presented with today. Okay, so from a communication standpoint, and I have heard, you know, Mike Tomlin say this many times, that he has teenage boys and a lot of the players on the team could associate more with his teenage players than, teenage sons than what they can do with him. So he had to make adjustments so he could communicate appropriately. And I think that's exactly what he has done. He has adjusted to be able to communicate effectively. And to give you an example, and a lot of what occurs do not come out in the public.
Very well said. And thanks again for the opportunity, Mr. Neal. Just to reflect for 30 seconds back to what JT Thomas was talking about, going back into the 70s, I'm a college football fan, so I've never been an NFL fan. But I was always a Pittsburgh Steelers fan back then and a Kansas City Chiefs fan, because those were two teams that brought in black players. JT Thomas, first black player in Florida State history. Joe Gilliam, basically the first black quarterback. And back in the 70s, the Pittsburgh Steelers in Kansas City was the only team in the NFL that had more black players than white players, sure. 23-20, where the Miami Dolphins only had three black players on their whole roster. But as far as Coach Tomlin, can relate to 80% of his roster. Mm-hmm. Coach Tomlin does a great job communicating with those egos that's on the team. You got some great players on offense and defense. The problem that he's running into that Bill Cowher and Chuck Noll didn't have is he's not able to communicate as well with his staff, because I believe his staff has been brought in for the most part by the ownership, so he's not communicating. That was a problem he had with Todd Haley, because Todd Haley was not basically listening to the head coach, and that was a problem.
And you know what? I brought this up many times with friends, and you have to kind of read in between the lines, and unless you're part of the organization, okay? And there's two individuals that I feel are the Rooney's guys, and I'm not saying it's wrong, okay? But number one, Todd Haley, and if you understand the family history, Todd Haley used to be a ball boy. Mm-hmm. You know, his dad, if I'm not mistaken, played for the Steelers, coached for the Steelers, okay?
General manager.
So when he came over, general manager, so when Todd Haley was brought in, he was the Rooney's guy. So it was only so much that Mike Tomlin could do to address the situation. Now, this current situation where Todd Haley was let go, and again, I'm only speculating, okay, but I believe that Mike Tomlin has a great relationship. I don't care what anyone says. I think he has a great relationship with Ben Roethlisberger, okay? And Ben has and Ben has speculated about retirement in the past, and we know, but he recently came out and said, hey, I can play three more years. And I think that he said that under the pretense that Todd Haley would no longer be around. Now, I mentioned one person, and you could actually respond to what I'm saying here as well. But the other person is Butler, the defensive coordinator. I think that's Rooney's guy as well, because he has stood in line for so many years behind Dick LeBeau. So based on what I know, and a lot of people might push back on this a little bit, but based on what I know, for the most part, if the Rooneys say something is going to occur, they do everything that they can to try to keep their promise that was made. So I feel as though they promised Butler the defensive coordinator position, and he's their guy. But I tell you one thing, they better be able to stop the run. Okay, they better be able to stop the run, because we cannot repeat the same type of performance.
The Steelers made it perfectly clear all season long they can't stop the run or the pass.
Right.
You know, Keith Butler was a longtime linebacker coach. He played linebacker, never did anything but coach linebackers. He does not make game adjustments quick enough. You know, he can't spell cat if you spotted him to C and a T, taking Hollywood Henderson. But the problem with the Pittsburgh Steelers is not so much defense, because their defense is always going to be suspect. The problem with the Pittsburgh Steelers is twofold. One is the quarterback, who's a Hall of Fame quarterback, Big Ben. Big Ben's the last guy on the field and the first guy off. Now, that's not a problem because he puts up numbers, but Ben gets his timing with his wide receivers during game time. That's why when the Rooneys and the coaching staff keep interchanging these outstanding athletes, it hurts Ben.
I'm not going to have anybody on our show bashing Ben Roethlisberger, Kev. I ain't having it.
I understand that.
You know what I mean? But I'm just saying.
I love Big Ben.
Well, we can't tell by what you're saying. But allow me to interject just a moment.
But I never responded, so give me a minute.
But I do want to get the professional's opinion on here.
Right.
You and Smoking Jim are throwing darts at each other.
Let me say this.
Smoking Jim, don't ever disagree with Kevin.
The Pittsburgh.
Did you get the rules when you came in?
I'm a Quaker Valley fan.
The Pittsburgh, oh yeah.
Whoa! Man, that came out of nowhere.
Well, I'm glad most of the people can't relate to that, so,
Jim,
you know.
That cut. You bleeding?
Yeah.
You bleeding?
Not at all, because we have years of success, so.
A rub. The Quaker Valley beat Aliquippa, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you outside of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, first time in about 50 years. But okay, but going back to the Steelers receivers and Ben Roethlisberger, it'd be hard for you to argue that the Pittsburgh Steelers have the best wide receiving core in the NFL. And, you know, Juju Smith-Schuster, who wouldn't replace him? Who wouldn't replace Eli Rogers with him? Okay, Martavius Bryant. Martavius Bryant hasn't played a 16-game season. This was his first 16-game season in 2017. So after being out of football basically for a year and a quarter, he missed all of 2016 and missed a quarter in 2015 because of his drug issues, which I hope is behind him. So again, in 2017, Ben Roethlisberger finally had a complete receiving core. And a shout out to my homeboy Richard Mann, who was the wide receivers coach from Aliquippa. Thank you. And he just retired, and I thought he did a tremendous job, you know, with the receivers as
but
well.
But please let me allow the defensive back to comment on this defensive dilemma.
Yeah. Well, that's hitting the rewind, but there's a few things. Obviously, I'm going to have a different perspective from you guys because I look at it from different
Because you know what you're talking about.
I didn't say that. No, going back just to Mike Tomlin as a communicator. Tom is a great communicator. I think that the difference here, he's communicating with players in a different, under a different regime. That regime is who controlled the players. In the day before, the head coach controlled the team. Coaches today don't control the team. The front office control the team. And Tomlin is a super communicator. This guy gets it, and I think he does a great job with his guys. But when you really get down to it, coaches are there really to keep these guys happy and make them happy. Now, there's only one team I see in the NFL is a throwback where the coach runs the team. That's New England.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Belichick runs the team. If you look at most teams in my day, if a quarterback threw one touchdown or, got intercepted twice or three times, he's out the game. Today, coaches don't pull players. So for most players, there's no penalty for screwing up. So what happens? Nothing. There's no threat. Mel Blount got pulled out of the AFC Championship game in Oakland on national TV. And I never forget that, and Mel was upset. And Mel was in the down at the Super Bowl, and obviously Mel is Mel. He's going up the press. And I never forget Bud Carson walked up Mel and I in the hall of the Fountain Blue Hotel. And what he told Mel, he said, Mel, I see you upset that I pull you. Mel said, yeah, I'm upset. I'm on national TV. He said, you know what? If you play like you played last week in Oakland, I'll pull you. I'm not going to use the expletives, you know, out of Super Bowl. So today coaches they don't pull players. Belichick, you can see that the owner runs the team. I mean that the organization, Belichick runs that team. And I don't think most coaches do that, because what happened is this. Think about it. If I'm a head coach and I'm connected with all my players, I'm not going to pull my head coach in midseason, because there's a connection there psychologically, where now they will fire a coach in midseason, regardless. So, because does he have control? No, he doesn't. Because if you got control of these 49 horses, I'm not going to change coaches in midstream. But if you don't have control of them, I can pull you.
Look, we're going to take just a moment and break and come back and wrap up this segment on Steelers and get everybody's opinion on why the Steelers are not in the Super Bowl, and get everybody's prediction on who's going to win the Super Bowl before we let JT Thomas out of here. But be reminded, you're listening to Soul Take Champions Live, Urban Media Today Radio.